Hello, and welcome to Season 3 of the Fashion Law Network podcast. I'm your host, Kasia Zabrowska-Traubin, a patent attorney and fashion enthusiast based in Los Angeles, California. Join me as I break down legal cases going on in the world of fashion today, discuss recent fashion news, and demystify patent law. Hello, thank you so much for tuning in. As always, I have a very special episode today about a very hot topic, NFT or non-fungible tokens. So NFTs have been around for years, but they really exploded recently, driving up the price of digital artworks to some really crazy levels. For example, the famous Beeple NFT, which recently sold for an astounding $69 million. NFTs really came to my attention when I started seeing various statements in the press from my favorite luxury fashion houses that they will be entering the NFT field. And in particular, Gucci has been pretty vocal with a future release of NFTs. So of course that piqued my interest. And on this episode, I am joined by a special guest, a fellow patent attorney, Irene Lee. Ms. Lee is very knowledgeable about NFTs and the various intellectual property laws that are applicable to that subject matter. Ms. Lee was a panelist at a recent Beverly Hills Bar Association, CLE, All About NFTs, which I attended virtually. I was so impressed with her knowledge and analysis of NFTs that I had to have her on my podcast for this episode. Ms. Lee is a partner at the law firm of Russ, August, and Cabot in Los Angeles, and for the past 20 years, she's focused her practice on all different aspects of intellectual property law, including patents, trademarks, copyright, trade secret, and right of publicity. As a registered patent attorney, Ms. Lee employs her patent prosecution experience in strategizing patent litigation and licensing issues. She's earned many accolades during her career, such as being featured in the World Trademark Review 1000, in addition to the Los Angeles Business Journal, naming her one of the most influential women lawyers in Los Angeles, one of the most influential minority lawyers in Los Angeles, and one of the leading intellectual property lawyers in California. So I'm very honored to have her join me on this podcast episode in a little bit. So before my discussion with Ms. Irene Lee, I will briefly define the key terms that I think are important to understand when discussing NFTs. Then I will describe my own journey into the NFT purchasing landscape. And I know that the NFT world can seem kind of intimidating to lots of people, but I'm here to tell you that if I can do it, you can do it. I'm not a techie type person by any means, and I was able to figure it out. It's kind of like how I don't know how a TV works exactly, but I still enjoy watching it, and I can record shows and do various searches and other functions, even though I don't really know the technology behind it. So first, let's go over just a few important definitions in the world of NFTs to make this episode easier to understand to anyone who's new to NFT. Learning this really helped me understand the basis of the NFT landscape. So an NFT, non-fungible token, is basically defined as a collectible digital asset, and it can be used to represent items such as photos, videos, audio, and other types of digital files. So essentially, NFTs are like any other kind of physical collector's item, but instead of receiving, say, a beautiful painting in a frame that you can hang on your wall, you, for example, could get a JPEG file instead. So NFTs can be bought and sold just like other types of art, and just like a physical traditional art piece, the value is pretty much set by the demand and the kind of market that's in place at the present time. So an NFT is a unit of data that's stored on a virtual ledger, and that is called blockchain. So the blockchain is like a digital record of transactions, and the name blockchain comes from the structure where you have these blocks or individual records, and they're all kind of linked together to make one list called a chain. So these blockchains are used for recording all of these transactions that are made with cryptocurrency. So basically, this blockchain certifies that a digital asset is unique and it's not interchangeable. So some of the most popular NFT platforms to buy and sell NFTs, and this is just a few, of course, there's so many, are Wax.io, which is a trading card platform, basically like a digital version of buying and selling trading cards, like basketball cards, and they're mostly sold in blind packs, digitally, of course. Then we have Nifty Gateway, which is owned by Gemini, which is the Winklevoss twins when they bought it in 2019. And this is a platform that I've been using in my NFT experience. Then two more popular NFT marketplaces are SuperRare and OpenSea. So for example, on Nifty Gateway, you can buy with US dollars and they change it into Ethereum. And then each sale is individually minted to that purchaser. So this is another key term in the NFT world, minting. So minting an NFT is basically how your digital art becomes a part of the blockchain. Think of it like how metal coins are minted and then they're added into the circulation for the population. So NFTs are also tokens that get minted once they are created. Then you have something called an NFT drop, and each marketplace does this differently. It's basically just when NFTs are released, like where, for example, for some big concert coming, you know, the drop would be when all the tickets come out. This usually means that there's going to be lots of buyers ready to buy when the drop starts. So it's best to be all registered on the NFT platform of your choice if you want to get in on the purchasing frenzy. You'll need a digital wallet like MetaMask, which my special guest Irene Lee will discuss later on this episode, so I won't get into that too much right now. So on these NFT online marketplace platforms, NFTs can be sold in various ways. There's something called an open edition, which means that you have an open amount of time. So let's say it says 1,000 to buy an open edition. So you have 5 minutes and then you can try to sell as many of your art as you can on there as there are buyers in that allotted amount of time. And then say we're using Nifty Gateway as our example. So Nifty would take it and then they mint it. And then a while later you'd get your NFT. So it's not instantaneous. Then you have auctions like, for example, a half a day or 24 hour auctions. There's blind auctions, which obviously means you can't see who the bidders are. So this is kind of like eBay, where some items you can purchase via a auction or right away with the buy it now feature on there, if you guys are familiar with eBay. And then the big issue here with NFT is the environmental impact. The NFT process is not very environmentally friendly, and I could do a whole episode on this issue alone, but just boiling it down to the main point, basically making the digital artwork requires major amounts of energy and computing power, which of course translates to greenhouse gases. However, as this technology moves forward, this will hopefully improve soon. So now I will briefly describe my journey into the NFT purchasing landscape, and hopefully I can illustrate all the definitions I just went over in a practical context here where it'll make a little bit more sense. So my only experience, as I mentioned before, with purchasing or attempting to purchase NFTs is the Nifty Gateway Marketplace. So Nifty Gateway is probably one of the most popular websites for artists to release various digital collections. And the website also has a secondary marketplace where NFT owners can sell from their digital collectibles. It makes it pretty easy to buy and sell any kind of NFT token on there. I've never gotten that far, so I can't describe the reselling process, but here's my experience. So first I went to Nifty Gateway, niftygateway.com, and you make an account under the login sign up tab at the top. And then once you're all signed up, you validate your account with a code that Nifty texts you to your phone that you have linked up. Then once you're in your account, you can link up your bank account or your credit card. And so then I get notifications for various artist drops, like for my favorite artists that I like. However, unfortunately, I was not fast enough to get the first NFT that I really wanted. It was only open for a limited time. And it was one of the Gucci Ghost NFTs by the artist Trevor Andrew. You guys might know him. He was hired by Gucci a few years ago to do those really famous graffiti versions of the Gucci monogram on Gucci bags, lots of Gucci shoes, various accessories. I always loved his version of the monogram on those Princetown loafers, and I still regret not getting them, but it's too late now. I don't think they sell them anymore. So I missed the initial drop due to the limited time for the Gucci Ghost NFT that I wanted. And then I saw that the Gucci Ghost NFT is being sold on the secondary market. So by people who had bought it on the primary market during the artist dropped. But then those secondary market NFTs were reselling for like 10 times, if not more than the original price. So I just couldn't bring myself to pay that much. And according to OceanDrive.com, Trevor Andrew's first NFT collection actually sold out in only 12 seconds back in November of 2020. And then his second drop in March, this is the one that I tried to get in on, made him $3.5 million in revenue and placed him in the top 10, 15 NFT artists in the world. His next drop is slated for June of this year, 2021. So I have that on my calendar, and I recommend following your favorite artists who are on Nifty Gateway, if that's the platform you're using, of course, for exclusive release information, so you won't miss a drop that way. Then another NFT I wanted to get was a Paris Hilton NFT. It's an auction item, and it was titled Iconic Crypto Queen. That was back in April. I made it in time for the drop, but the NFT auction ended up going over $1 million, so I had to bow out pretty early on that one. Anyway, that's my little journey into the NFT landscape. It's been really fun, and I really love browsing all the really cool NFTs by some of my favorite artists on Nifty Gateway. I really recommend it if you're interested in getting into the market for these. It's a fun hobby. Okay, so now we're going to go ahead with my discussion and interview with NFT legal expert Irene Lee. I had a really great time chatting with her, and I hope you guys enjoy the discussion as much as I did. So here we go. Hello, Irene, and welcome to the Fashion Law Network podcast today. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Great. Now, before we get into our NFT discussion today, can you tell me a little bit about your journey into intellectual property law?
Sure. So I've been in the intellectual property field for a little over 20 years. I think I got lucky in a way. So I studied biochemistry in undergrad that led me to opportunities in working for firms that specialize in IP. And when you think of, 20 years ago, we were just having this internet boom. So I think there were a lot of opportunities there. And from then on, you start representing clients who needed help with, patent prosecution, licensing, enforcement, you name it, management. And, as a lot of clients, they don't just have like a patent field. They all have names. So there's trademark. Everybody's creating content in some way, whether it's in the form of visual art or sound recording or literature. So we start helping them with the copyright issues. So overall, I think every day when you're in the field of intellectual property, you learn something new. Most of the clients that I represent, they're innovators, creators, inventors, and then it could be just the business folks, but with a very creative idea. So it's been very rewarding to be in this field.
Right, that's great. So let's discuss NFTs and kind of the big fact that the law hasn't really caught up with this technology yet. So, in your experience, which type of ILE is or IP law is most implicated here?
Yeah, so when you are looking at intellectual property, I think of usually like four or five different types. So we talked about patent, we talked about trademark, we talk about copyright, trade secrets, and some folks that we represent, they definitely have right of publicity. But overall, I see a lot of copyright issues being raised quite a bit. So when we are talking about NFTs, because you're dealing with some form of creative work, whether it's it could be music or music in the background with some kind of visual art. We also some NFTs in the literature world. So there was a journalist in the New York Times who wrote about NFT, and he actually auctioned his article. And that was sold for over, $500,000 as
Oh,
NFT
wow.
representing that article. I know. So, when you are getting into this, you see a copyright being implicated quite a bit. And then you could see the fashion world, all the artists creating some form of, it could be music, visual art. And then yeah, it's just a matter of time. I can't wait to see like Disney's and all the studios coming up with, all the contents they have. So you'll see a lot of copyright law being implicated quite a bit.
Right. And so when someone purchases an NFT, who owns the copyright?
Yeah, so that is a good exercise that I go through with the client quite a bit these days. So there was some, and I get this question quite a bit, like, just because you buy a piece of art, from gallery, it doesn't mean that you own the underlying copyright. However, for some reason, some folks out there thought they were actually going to purchase NFT, the digital representation of the work. But by purchasing the NFT, somehow they are now going to own the underlying copyright. So that is not the case. And unless it is specified otherwise in writing, the copyright remains with the original artist or original seller. And I think this is the part that, takes you to the next analysis, because sometimes the original artist may not be, quote unquote, the author. So when you're filling out, let's say, a copyright application, we have to talk about who owns the copyright and who the author is. It's the two-page form that, it looks simple enough, but I think that may be one of the most challenging forms to fill out because there is a requirement on identifying who the author is. And if you are an employee working for, let's say, Pixar or Disney, you don't, even though you're the one who created the drew that artwork, you're not necessarily the author because you're the employee of the company, and company will be identified as the author. And they probably are the ones who own the copyright under work made for hire. So I do go through this exercise with some of our clients and, making sure that our client actually has the right that they thought they had before we spend and, our resource in creating or what we call minting an NFT. So in terms of copyright, it will remain with the original artist or the original seller.
Right, that is a really important point to make. So, can you explain how the somewhat unique commission process works in an NFT sale for the original artist?
Yeah, so this is what I get. I think this may be the one of the most exciting aspect of NFTs or any transactions using smart contracts on blockchain. I think the transparency and the self-executing aspect of smart contract is making it so much easier to have this what we call like a secondary market. There is this built-in secondary market out there. So imagine you dropped your either visual art or album as NFT. And usually the platforms or marketplace that you on which the transaction happens, they usually get 15% or 20%, depending on what the arrangement is, of the proceeds from the first sale. So like foundation, they get 15% and the original seller will get 85% of from the sale, minus what we call gas fee. After that, the purchaser, the one who actually purchased NFT, has the ability to resell that, whether it's the NFT representing visual art or audio. And when that happens, the original seller would receive some form of a commission or a license fee. So even after the first sale, the original seller will receive a certain percentage of each subsequent sale. And I think that is kind of liberating, and it is creating an opportunity for a lot of like underrepresenting, you know, artists out there, finding ways to monetize their asset. And that's one of the things that I've been very excited about. I think the previous opportunity I had to present this, I used the word like democratizing art, because it's not just the Christie's and, you know, kind of the fancy ritzy auction houses of the world, but now you have a platform on which you get to present your art, have buyers from all around the world looking at your work, make a purchase. And if they decide to sell your artwork, you actually receive a percentage of the subsequent sale. So I think that's something that you're going to see more and more. But I also learned that that is not always the case. So if you're collectors, the buyers, you know, investing in NFTs, you know, make sure the platform makes it clear to you what the subsequent sale transaction is going to look like. And it'll be important for folks to understand the terms that will govern the subsequent transactions.
Right. And do you think there's any other relevant legal issues to consider in the NFT landscape that you haven't covered yet?
I think there are a lot.
Yeah.
So we're just kind of unpacking. There are layers. I think when we think about, you know, NFTs, just the word itself, you know, I appreciate you kind of walking the listeners through what NFT is. But even to this day, you know, I have clients who've been selling, buying, you know, NFTs, but still, like when they're asking me questions, I'll go, oh, they actually don't understand certain aspect of it. So in terms of just staying within intellectual property realm, you know, the trademark law still applies, patent law still applies. You know, the one of the things that I found fascinating, I know, I understand you're a patent attorney yourself. So I actually looked through, you know, Nike's patent, which took them, you know, 3 days and 1 year and 3 days, and, you know, they expedited their prosecution to get the patent.
Right.
And what they've been promoting is, you know, if you're spending $150 on a pair of, you know, Nike shoes, now Nike is giving a digital representation of that design, the shoes, and granting some form of a license to the buyer to, in a way, like procreate or create like a derivative work, so to speak. And I think those are the things that you're going to see. So whether it's a work that will bear the Nike logo, which will be protected through trademark, but now there's an art, like a visual art, that is being created. So the copyright again is going to be implicated, and to the extent that you know, the whatever the method or process that is being employed to create this derivative work, you're going to see patent issues being implicated. And if you decide to impose somebody who's readily recognizable, now you're dealing with right of publicity. So I'm not even touching on this all regulatory issues with SEC. It's just purely under the umbrella of intellectual property. You're going to see all these issues popping up. Previously, you and I talked about the transaction that took place sometime in March, where this gentleman known going by Beeple, his artwork was sold for $69 million. So, you know, I think that's another example where you see the copyright issue, but when you actually look at his work, you think about, oh, you know, would the, you know, first sale doctrine apply? Would the, you know, fair use doctrine apply? So I think there are a lot of other IP issues you're going to see. And I'm just kind of waiting to see how it will play out. But there are just plenty of articles and videos talking about all these, you know, headline grabbing sales transactions out there. And I think a lot of practitioners can definitely benefit from a lot of analysis that's been done for us. And then also you can listen or read through, and then you can raise your own concerns or disagreements or agreements. And I think that will be a good exercise for a lot of practitioners to go through. And I think, and then having this type of conversations openly to kind of tread through some of the issues that we're facing, that's been tremendously helpful. Personally for me.
Right. Yeah, you're right. There's so many layers to this, even in just the narrow IP landscape. I wanted to quickly discuss another recent really famous NFT case making headlines, which is the Mars House. And just, I'm just going to fill in my listeners real quick here if they haven't heard about it. It's basically a colorful virtual house that was designed by a Canadian designer named Krista Kim. And the Mars House was actually the world's first NFT house, and it recently sold for over $500,000. The buyer agreed as a condition of the sale that the collector is required to delete all the Mars House 3D files and provide verification of deletion to the designer, Krista Kim. However, now there's some issues with this, as there's some headlines saying that there is alleged copyright fraud claim issues, because one of the collaborators that Krista Kim used is threatening legal action against her on the basis that he actually created the visualizations for this virtual house and thus maintains rights in Kim's digital designs. So what do you have any thoughts on this, Irene?
So it kind of takes me back to what we were discussing. Before you start minting or creating NFT, you know, this is one of those situations that you never want to hear when you're representing a client who created NFT and did a successful sale, only to find out that, oh, there's someone else who made claim to have made contribution and should have been named as the author. So my understanding is the other purported the author or contributor is based in another country. And I'm not, like, I looked around, but I didn't see any indication that this particular work was copyright registered. So one of the things that I start recommending a little more strongly with some of our clients who are thinking of minting their artwork is, let's just register, because that will force everybody involved to really go through and identify who's involved. And this is nothing unique in the NFT world. You know, you hear about it even in the physical world, where people come out and claim some ownership or some kind of authorship. So there's nothing unique about it. I think it's just that because it is NFT, it was highly publicized sale. So I think this is another case that is grabbing headlines. But the importance of having the artwork copyright registered I don't want to undermine the importance of it, you know, especially, you know, with the case that came down a couple of years ago from the Supreme Court, where, and then there's a one thing that I do want to clarify is the case is called Fourth Estate versus WallStreet.com. And this is one case where the Supreme Court came down and kind of resolved this longstanding circuit split over procedural issues. Are you required to have a registration or have at least filed a copyright application in order to have a copyright infringement lawsuit in federal court? And the decision penned by the late Justice Ginsburg said, the Copyright Office had to actually take some action, whether it's a registration, issuance of registration, or a refusal. So there has to be an action taken by the Copyright Office in order for the copyright, purported copyright owner to file a copyright infringement suit in a federal court. And I think that's significant because in order to prepare that application, you actually have to go through that exercise of identifying who the authors are, when the creation took place, whether this was published, and also who the claimant is.
Right.
So,
exactly.
Yeah. And then that doesn't necessarily, help you avoid this type of situations, but it just kind of reminded me of the importance of getting a copyright registered. And I'll be curious to see what would happen here.
Yeah, that's definitely advice I give my clients to register that copyright.
Yes.
Okay, so now let's switch gears a little bit and briefly discuss NFTs in the fashion space, since this is a Fashion Law Network podcast. So a few weeks ago, VogueBusiness.com published an article saying that luxury brands are poised to join the NFT party. And Gucci recently announced and confirmed that they're going to be coming out with various NFTs. So currently, the NFT fashion space is limited, at least according to my research. There are some brands that sell NFTs, but they're pretty limited to gifts of like clothing pieces, some like 3D shoe gifts, but buyers can't really do much with them. Just look at them on your computer. And the current fashion NFT user experience, in my opinion, doesn't really have like the kind of polish and high standards that is expected by luxury fashion buyers. There is a fashion NFT virtual game called Decentraland. It's owned by Gemini, who also owns Nifty Gateway. And I've never tried this platform, but according to Coindesk.com, Decentraland is an Ethereum-based blockchain platform where users can purchase, build, and monetize virtual reality applications. So users can purchase virtual land in the platform, and then that gives them ownership and control over the environment and applications that they create. Then the players can buy fashion NFTs in the Decentraland wearables market. But when I look through it, it seemed like a lot of the outfits were kind of cartoonish. So my question to you, Irene, is what do you see happening in fashion with NFTs? Do you think they're going to be embraced by the fashion community? Is this a trend that we're going to see more of?
I think NFT is here to stay. I think we've definitely seen some booms in maybe outside of the fashion world. And then we hear the word like, is this a bubble or boom? I don't think it is either. It's more of a rush. The NFT has been around for at least 4 or 5 years. But because there are so many, highly recognized transactions happening, with the Christie's auction house, hosting and making it official with Beeple's artwork that was auctioned off for $69.3 million. I think everybody is kind of waking up and, all the news media is running a story. Fashion to me, it's just the perfect match. Just like Nike is coming out with, digital representation of their shoe design, I could see, Gucci and, Burberry and all these, like, they're a recognizable pattern that is already protected as a trade dress and also copyright. I think it's just kind of natural for them to create digital representation of their maybe next line, and they could do kind of limited edition. I think that is something that you probably will see. And sometimes I do wonder, I don't really, you know, follow a lot of kind of fashion forward trends, so to speak. But at the same time, I do have clients in that space, and I'm trying to kind of follow, you know, what's happening. And, you know, right now we're already thinking of what's happening in 2022. And already that is part of their business model. And it doesn't take a whole lot more resource. It's just more of a, do we want to do this? Do we want to be that company? And some clients, they are concerned, genuinely concerned about the amount of energy that it takes to mint these NFTs. And they will take a position that, well, you know, we want to be known as a sustainable, eco-friendly company. And given the fact that right now, some platforms are promoting themselves as a more energy conservative platforms, but still, I think that is something that we are going to see a lot of other platforms working through. And we have some clients genuinely concerned about being associated with this, you can call it a trend or another aspect of their fashion, where you'll be utilizing a lot of resource. So I could see a lot of big brands having maybe limited edition, and you see that in the music industry, art industry. So fashion, naturally, that is here. I just did a presentation to the designer in South Korea on Sunday, and I think they're more open to like a digital assets, and they're more open to that idea. And you see the, you know, like a lot of countries kind of opening up to the idea of having own a digital currency. So I think it's very tied to digital assets, whether it's an NFT or, you know, digital currency. So what I think of it as a trend, I think it's more of a rush at this point. I see a lot of companies at least thinking about it, whether they're going to do it or not. I think it's more of their business decision. But if they're not going to do it, somebody else is going to.
That's really interesting, especially with sustainability and fashion being so on trend right now too. That's going to be interesting to see how that interplays. So before we conclude the episode, Irene, do you have any advice for any artists or designers that are listening to this podcast episode who may be apprehensive to enter the NFT space?
Yes. I know there's just the word itself, it may be a little strange or foreign, or some people may think that, oh, you know, I feel so behind, it's already out there. It's kind of like people feel like they missed the opportunity to invest in Bitcoin. So, but I kind of want you to think about how the future kind of came a little earlier, because, you know, us being at home last year, you know, most people didn't even know what Zoom was. Now we don't communicate or hold meetings without Zoom. So just think of how the world has changed a little faster than we initially planned. So whenever there are changes, of course, there is some resistance, and, you know, there's, you know, folks who are more reluctant to adopt. But just think of it this way. It's here. It's not going anywhere. And you might as well just know it, especially if you're in the fashion field or legal field. I think this is something that people are going to talk about. So just embrace it. And maybe spend just one weekend, just go on YouTube, just watch a bunch of videos on blockchain, smart contract, what minting is. And if you don't have a digital wallet, just go to MetaMask and see what that is. And there are a lot of great resources out there. I can't even begin to tell you, because there are just so many, to be honest. And every law firm out there is writing some form of article about this. There are a lot of, you know, webinars and a lot of presentations out there. And just know enough so that when you are given an opportunity to represent a client in that field, or if you are, in fact, the folks who are going to open your own business, launching your fashion line and whatnot, at least know what it is so that you can say, okay, I'm going to do it or I'm not going to do it. Whatever the decision you're going to make, I want you to make an informed decision.
That's great advice. Thank you so much, Irene, for joining me. This was a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thanks. And that concludes season 3. Episode 9 of the Fashion Law Network podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed that episode, and please stay tuned next week for episode 10. Thank you, and I hope you have a wonderful day. Bye.